Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are The Testament of Anne Lee, Zodiac Killer Project, and Peter Huger's Day.
I've got three somewhat unusual movies to talk about this week. I'm very glad to see that some filmmakers are actually taking some chances and doing things in different ways. They're not all hugely successful movies, but each one has its virtues, and I'm happy to talk about them a bit. So the first one I want to talk about is The Testament of Anne Lee. This is directed by Mona Fassbold. It was written by Brady Corbett and Mona Fassbold, and it is it's a historical movie, and it's a docudrama, basically, or no, not really, a biopic is what it is, because it's all about a very real person who lived way back in the 18th century, Anne Lee. And she was basically the founder of the Shakers, the religious sect that got a certain amount of prominence way back in the 1700s, and is still around apparently today, according to the end of this movie, although in a very small way. It is by no means a major religion, but apparently it's still perking along out there in some places. And Anne Lee, who started it, appears to have been a very fascinating figure in all kinds of ways. And this movie is basically telling the story of her life. It starts when she's a little girl, and then it continues mainly when she's an adult, played by Amanda Seyfried. So what we have is the story of this woman who becomes very, very religious, and she is very interested in this idea of testifying. The movie is called The Testament of Anne Lee, and there's a good deal of testifying in this, in the sense of sort of bearing witness and becoming ecstatic and shaking. They're called the Shakers, after all. And flinging their arms about and speaking in bizarre ways and manifesting their religious faith in these very dramatic and visible ways. And what we have is the very gradual growth of the sect. I guess we might call it a cult that had been started by Anne Lee. And then she comes to America with a few of her followers, and they spread the faith in America as much as they can. And it's a challenging environment. They're trekking through the wilderness and finding a place to settle down and trying to find the place that they are convinced the Lord has ordained for them to live and spread their particular version of the gospel. And eventually they succeed in doing that. And at one point along the way, and this is, of course, a very big turning point, Anne Lee decides, she has a revelation, I guess, she doesn't just decide, that actually what God really wants us all to do is to get rid of all of our sensual attachments, and that means no sex. So they become a celibate cult. Anne Lee herself has not been celibate. She's had kids, but now they are supposed to abstain from all sexuality and all sorts of sensuality of various kinds. And so that becomes a very big part of the movie. And obviously that's challenging for people. And Anne Lee has to go through various kinds of challenges along the way, in addition to spreading her gospel and her message, which, as you can imagine, with the idea of no sex, among other things, is not all that easy to convince people to join onto, but she has some real success of it. So that is what The Testament of Anne Lee is about. It is all about the founding and the development of this religious sect, and a difficult religious sect to keep up going over the years and the decades and the centuries, because when you're not having children, when you're not having sex, you're not having children. When you're not having children, you're not having new adherence to the religion that you might bring up in the faith. So anyway, it's an interesting subject, I think a very, very interesting subject. And the movie has a pretty good cast. Amanda Seyfried has never been a favorite actor of mine, but it's nice to see her having a really big sort of juicy role like this. But the main thing I want to focus on now is the way Mona Fassbold has directed this movie. It is a very experimental film. It's almost an avant-garde film at times. There are those scenes of testifying that I mentioned before, when people people are using their bodies and their faces and their voices in very extravagant ways to manifest their faith in God and their excitement in the faith of the Lord. And this is done with choreography, choreographed movements, very stylized, nothing realistic about it. And there's a lot of music in the film. There's a lot of singing. It's almost a musical at times. Now, the music itself is fine. It's based largely on old Shaker hymns, and they are familiar to some extent because they have survived in the sort of folk music legacy of America. But what I didn't like about the music and the testament of Ann Lee was the quality of the singing. I just don't think it's good. It's sung like pop songs more than like hymns a lot of the time. And I think that was a miscalculation on the part of the filmmakers. However, it's a very unusual movie to watch, very stylized, well over 2 hours. And a good amount of that time is taken up with music and dancing, choreography, people vocalizing, and music playing on the soundtrack. And again, it's very stylized, very non-realistic in those parts. Other parts are reasonably realistic. And it's a very unusual and adventurous movie in that respect. So I wish The Testament of Ann Lee worked better as just a movie, but I really respect its attempt to tell this story in an unusual way, in a different way, to treat a distinctive topic in a distinctive way. I really salute that. So I hope people will give The Testament of Ann Lee a chance. Expand your movie-going horizons a bit. It's an unusual movie, not a great movie by any means, but a very interesting movie. Now, the second film I'd like to talk about, Peter Hujar's Day, is also a very unusual movie in a lot of ways, and here is how it came about. Peter Hujar was a photographer. He died way back in the late 80s of AIDS, and he was an important photographer. He wasn't recognized all that much during his life, but since he died, his work has been taken up, and he's really known as a major American photographer. But what happened is that there was a writer named Linda Rosenkrantz, and she wanted to do some books about artists whom she knew, just detailing their daily lives. And one of the people she decided to do, and this is all real that I'm talking about now, one of the people she decided to do this with was this photographer, Peter Hujar. So she sat down with him, and she did a very long interview with him, which was tape recorded. So that was all very exciting, and she did that. However, the tape was lost for a long time, and it never did turn into a book. She never got around to that. But more recently, a full transcript of that day-long tape recording with Peter Hujar was found, and, Linda Rosenkrantz thought it would be wonderful if this could be turned into a movie, and that is what we have now. So we have this book project, which never really came to fruition. Peter Hujar talking about the things that happened to him in a day. He took some photographs. He took some photographs of the famous beat poet Allen Ginsberg. He interacted with some other people. He made some phone calls. He did this. He did that. And he generally just lived his life for one day as a photographer. Very interesting. There's a little bit of talk about his gay identity in this, but not very much. He was very well known as a gay photographer who photographed a lot of gay subjects. However, homosexuality is only a very small part of this movie. What we have is that tape recording turned into a feature film. It's not that long. It's about an hour and a quarter long. But we have it just these two talking. It is Peter Hujar, played beautifully by Ben Whishaw, and the writer, Linda Rosenkrantz, played beautifully by Rebecca Hall, and the two of them just recreate this conversation, which was actually had by Linda Rosenkrantz and Peter Hujar way back a long time ago, back in the 70s. So it's a very unusual movie. This movie consists almost entirely of just a conversation. And in order to lend the movie some visual variety, the director, Ira Sachs, by the way, a very, very good filmmaker, Ira Sachs transplants them to different locations. Sometimes they're in an apartment, sometimes they're outdoors, sometimes they're walking down the street. But the conversation just continues as if it were just one talk just happening with these two people conversing over about an hour and a quarter. That just continues, but they're in different locations from time to time. And every once in a while, some beautiful Baroque classical music comes out of the soundtrack and just breaks things up a little bit and gives us in the audience something to listen to besides just the voices of these two people. But the voices of those two people are really quite fascinating. It's just an interesting movie. It's a movie where people are talking about things that are not important in themselves. Who cares if Peter Hujar photographed Allen Ginsberg on this day? Who cares that Allen Ginsberg was a little bit iffy about whether he was going to do it or not? Who cares about little details like that? But when you hear these talk about these things, you realize that you are hearing another era being recreated in a modest but very likable way. And these two performers are just so fun. Ben Whishaw and Rebecca Hall, they really know what they're doing. They lend the characters a lot of humanity without ever being showy or over the top. It's just a very quiet, conversational movie, very totally dialogue-driven, very verbally oriented, and I just had a nice time watching it. And again, this movie does not outlive its welcome. It's roughly an hour and 15 minutes long, and that's just about the right running time for this. And again, it's such an unusual movie. Who ever heard of a feature film of just two people talking? It's been done before. My Dinner with Andre a few decades back was one. But it's just so offbeat. And it's such a change. And again, I hope people give this film a chance. You can find it streaming now, Peter Hujar's Day. You're interested in photography, you're interested in the 1970s, you're interested in American artistry, you're just interested in interesting conversation. This is a movie to check out. Again, expand your movie-going horizons. Give this film a chance. I really had a nice time watching it. Not an exciting movie, but a very, very thoughtful and interesting movie. And finally, another movie that deals with a book, and another movie that deals with a book that was never quite made into a movie. This is a film called Zodiac Killer Project, and it was directed by Charlie Shackleton. Charlie Shackleton really wanted to make a movie, a documentary about the famous Zodiac Killer, this horrible killer who murdered a lot of people, a real serial killer, real life stuff. And it remains a mystery to this day as to who the Zodiac Killer actually was. So that goes back a long, long time. Charlie Shackleton discovered a book about the Zodiac Killer that he decided he wanted to make into a movie, but he couldn't get the rights to the book. And that's why this movie is called Zodiac Killer Project. This whole film is all about Charlie Shackleton talking about and showing the things that he would have filmed if he had been able to get the rights to the book and to actually make the movie based on the book that he wanted to make. Now, of course, he can still make a movie about the Zodiac Killer. That's real life stuff. And the person who wrote the book doesn't have any kind of a copyright on the real life events. So, of course, Charlie Shackleton could just go out and make his movie about the Zodiac Killer. But he's really interested in making the movie that he would have made if he could have made it based on this book. So what he does is he takes us through the different locations. The movie moves to all these different places. We see sites where this happened and sites where that happened and all these different things. And every now and again, Charlie Shackleton goes back and refers again to that book and about the things he would have used from the book if he could have gotten the rights to the book to actually make the movie he wanted to make. But he can't do that, so then he's got to move away from the book and just start talking about the actual original case to begin with. It's just such an unusual movie, and I just had such a good time watching it. Again, a regular documentary about the Zodiac Killer might have been a good movie. It's a fascinating case. Among other things, the famous feature film Seven was based on the Zodiac Killer, and various lot other treatments in the movies and elsewhere have been made about the Zodiac Killer. And it's possible that Shackleton would have made a really good documentary based on that book. But what he's done now is to make a documentary that's not only good, it's really unusual. And it really takes you by surprise. And it gives you a totally different kind of perspective on things. Again, we see all these different locations and we hear Charlie Shackleton talking. And every now and again, he quotes from the book. But he can only quote a few words at a time, because otherwise he'll go beyond what fair use would allow him to use. And again, he did not get the rights to the book. So it's just an offbeat project that I just had a good time watching. I'm interested in the whole idea of true crime these days. My wife is a big true crime writer and scholar, and all kinds of people are dealing with true crime. It's very, 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 very trendy nowadays, true crime is. And again, I think that Charlie Shackleton probably would have made a pretty good documentary, but it's such fun to hear him say, what I would have shown at this point is this person locking eyes with that person and saying, my gosh, I think maybe that's the Zodiac killer. But then whatever would have happened next, and it was in the book, but I can't really get into that. But I'll tell you how I think it would have. Anyway, it's stuff like that for around an hour and a half. Very, very, very unusual treatment of this subject. And I think that in a way, we are fortunate that Charlie Shackleton didn't get the rights to that book, because he's made a movie which is much more unusual and much more adventurous. So I'm going to say it yet again today. Expand your movie-making horizons. Have a look at Zodiac Killer Project. It's so unusual, and it's such fun to watch in its own grim, grisly, and sometimes gruesome way that, well, I just really, really was taken with it. So Zodiac Killer Project, another very unusual movie, and all the movies I've talked about today are unusual. The Testament of Anne Lee, Peter Hujar's Day, Zodiac Killer Project. It shows that filmmakers are not just staying in the old formulas, the old molds. They're breaking them. Not always with total success, but I'm really happy to see it. I think that we need to make our movie going more adventurous. And that is my, well, what I hope is slightly adventurous story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films The Testament of Anne Lee, Zodiac Killer Project, and Peter Hujar's Day.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.